Inspector West. Calling Chief Inspector West.
Stand by for West. A crime file based on John Creasy's novel, Inspector West at Home, dramatized for radio by Maurice Travers. Inspector West at Home, starring Patrick Allen as Chief Inspector Roger West of Scotland Yard, and Sarah Lawson as his wife, Janet. Part 7, A Date with Justice.
A crooked copper here at the yard. That's a hell of a thing, Sir Guy.
A bitter pill for any assistant commissioner of police to have to swallow, Roger. One of my own men, a traitor.
How long have you known about this, sir?
Oh, I've suspected it for some months. Now you've brought me the concrete proof. Whistler Malone's attempt to escape from his cell with this key. I take it you've interrogated Malone?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's have it. Who gave him this key? It can only have been a police officer.
I don't know who it was, sir.
What the devil do you mean?
Malone's just not talking, sir.
Not talking? With a double murder charge against him for the killing of Pickerill and Joe Leach?
He still won't say a word, sir. It's my guess he's playing it dumb in the hope that his pal at the yard will make another attempt to help him.
We don't know who the blackguard is. Roger, he's got to be found, and found quickly.
No, it's not going to be easy, sir.
Easy or not, it's your job, Chief Inspector.
Mine, sir.
Since you came up with that tape recording of Pickerill and cleared yourself of the bribe-taking affair, you're the only man I can be certain of. I'm giving you complete authority to act in this case as of now.
Over Superintendent Abbott's head, sir.
You're responsible solely to me from this moment.
I see.
I want the man who handed Malone this key. The man who has betrayed his duty, his colleagues, and everything we stand for. You're sure that no one apart from the police officers has seen Malone?
No one, sir.
Who was the last man to do so?
P.C. Thompson. He took him his evening meal. Before that, Malone was questioned by Superintendent Abbott, and by Sergeant Mears and Inspector Cornish earlier in the day. But it could be any man in the crime department, sir. Or even one of the women police, for all we know, sir.
Well, I'm relying on you. Don't forget that, Roger, will you?
I won't, sir.
Now, I think we'd both better pack off home. It's late and I'm feeling rather tired.
Cigarette, Roger.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
Well, it's been a pretty grim day for you, one way and another.
About as grim as they come. Pickerill found shot and dumped in the river. Malone sitting in his cell at Cannon Row, not saying a word, and me. Well, I'm no closer to finding out why I was framed and what's behind it all.
And now, on top of everything, you've got to uncover a guilty copper.
Yes, and how do I do that? I can't put a watch on every man in the department. That's damn difficult, setting a copper to catch a copper.
Then what are you going to do, darling?
There's only one thing I can do, Jan. Tackle it from the other angle.
How do you mean?
Well, concentrate on digging out exactly what Pickerill was up to at the European Relief and Assistance Society. Now, once I've done that, it's got to lead me to the yard man involved.
Roger, do you think this renegade copper could be the real brains behind this whole business?
Well, there's no way of knowing. But we can't rule out the possibility. You'll stand by, Mark, won't you, in case I should need you?
Like a shot.
Then you'd better stay the night here, Mark.
Oh, splendid thought, Mrs. West.
Well, I'm off for bed. Ooh. Tomorrow's going to be a critical day. I've got to see Chatworth first thing in the morning.
Oh, Roger. Come in.
Oh, good morning, Sir Guy.
Oh, let's hope it proves to be. You haven't seen Superintendent Abbott yet, I take it?
No, sir.
I've informed him that the case is now in your hands. You and Abbott don't hit it off very well, do you?
Well, I can't say that we do, sir.
Now, Roger, what's the situation on the case at this moment?
Well, the superintendent's running a check on all the patrons of the European Relief Society, also the contributors to it.
Good.
Then Detective Inspector Cornish is following up the list of addresses Lois Randall made out for me.
Ah, yes, where Pickerill sent her to deliver those parcels or packages or whatever.
Yes, sir. Cornish is hunting up the names that belong to the addresses.
Anything else?
Well, there's this.
What is it?
The transcript of a murder trial, sir. The Benny Cox murder.
Have you still got that bee in your bonnet?
I'll call it what you like, Sir Guy. But from what Pickerill said on the tape recording, we know that my frame-up was organized because he was scared. He was afraid I'd get on to the whole truth about the 13th of January. The day Benny Cox was murdered.
Oh, yes. But you've already unearthed what that was. The fact that Cox worked for Whistler Malone, and thus by extension for Pickerill.
I still feel there's more to it than that. And I think I may have found a hint in this transcript.
What sort of hint?
Well, it's just here, sir, where the prosecuting counsel is questioning the accused Benny Cox's brother. Ah, here we are. Listen, Sir Guy. Now, Mr. Cox, the house in Newfield Street where you lived with your brother, the dead man, it was his property, was it not? Cox. That's right. Mind you, I had an idea that it might not. Counsel, just answer yes or no, if you please.
Well, perhaps I'm dull, Chief Inspector, but none of that means very much to me.
Well, it didn't to me at first either, sir. But you'll notice that the prosecutor cut off Alfred Cox in mid-sentence. Now, suppose that Cox had been allowed to finish what he was going to say.
What of it?
And suppose it was something like this. That Cox had an idea his brother didn't really own the house. That it really belonged to someone else.
But that's sheer speculation. Just guesswork.
Admittedly. And I can't ask Alfred Cox, seeing that he's up stakes and left London after his acquittal. But he was believed to have sold the house. Now, if it wasn't his house to sell, then who is the real owner? Oh,
Roger, I think you're clutching at straws here.
Maybe. And if you want another piece of guesswork, I'd say Whistler Malone murdered Benny Cox.
Well, all right. Leave the matter of the house in Newfield Street with me. You've got enough on your plate.
Well, thank you, sir.
What's your next move, Roger?
A visit to number 11 Bannock House, sir.
Bannock House?
Mrs. Raymond Fleming's flat, the European Relief Society's founder and president. It was thanks to her I got the tape recording that put me in the clear. She may be able to help me further, and I don't want to waste any time. The faster we can get to the bottom of this whole thing, the better.
Pickerel? Murdered?
Yes, Mrs. Fleming.
Good heavens. He was found in the river, you say?
By a police launch from the Thames Division.
Well, all his superstitions didn't help him, did they?
How do you mean?
Don't you remember, Inspector, on that tape? He went on about the unlucky 13th. He's obviously a highly superstitious man. Inspector, does this mean you've managed to discover what he was using the society for? What his criminal activities were?
No, Mrs. Fleming. Nor who's really behind it.
Oh, surely that's perfectly plain. Pickerel himself.
Ah, but he had other associates. The friends he spoke of on the tape.
Doesn't that mean Malone and those thugs of his?
It's possible.
Annette, my dear. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you had someone with you.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Fleming.
It's Chief Inspector West, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
May I ask what brings you here again?
Well, I wanted a few words with your wife, Mr. Fleming.
I'm at a loss to think why.
Raymond.
Please, my dear. I was under the impression, Inspector, that we'd have no more visits from the police.
Well, the case isn't concluded yet, sir, and until it is, we have to continue with our inquiries.
I'm sure Annette has already told you everything she knows about the entire unfortunate episode.
And Superintendent Abbott took my statement.
I'm well aware of that, of course.
Well, then.
But I thought there might possibly be something that your wife had overlooked, Mr. Fleming. Something that might be important. Now, that kind of thing can easily happen.
It hasn't happened in this instance, I assure you, Inspector. You know how much the society means to me. How anxious I am to avoid any unfavorable publicity.
As I've told you more than once, my dear, the best way of doing that is simply to terminate its existence.
Oh, Raymond, for heaven's sake.
My views on the matter have not changed, Annette. If anything, I disapprove more strongly than ever of the whole thing.
Raymond, dear, I'm sure the last thing the inspector wants to listen to is a family squabble.
Hmm? Oh, of course. I'm sorry, my dear. Do forgive me. And my apologies to you, too, Inspector.
No need for it, Mr. Fleming.
But indeed there is. I'm afraid I allowed my feelings to get the better of me. I'm not a believer in airing one's differences in public. Old-fashioned of me, no doubt, in these permissive times, but there it is. Now, if there's nothing further you want with my wife?
Not for the moment. However, if there should be anything else you happen to recall, Mrs. Fleming, no matter how trifling it may seem, I trust you'll let me know at once.
Naturally, she will.
You know where to contact me, Scotland Yard. Well, now I'll say goodbye. No, please don't trouble to see me out. I know the way. Chief Inspector West.
Good morning, sir. Detective Inspector Cornish reporting.
Oh, hello, Bob. What's all the formality in aid on?
I just thought I'd better start minding my P's and Q's now you're running the whole show.
Well, save yourself the effort. But I didn't know it was general currency already.
Oh, the whisper gets around, you know. And I've got ears like radar screens, don't forget.
Yes, I have noticed.
I'll bet it's put Abbott's nose out of joint. What did he say?
Well, I haven't seen him yet. Bob, how are you getting on with that list of addresses?
We haven't got through them all yet.
What do you mean by we? I thought I sent you on that job solo.
Oh, that's right. But yesterday, when Abbott was still in charge, he detailed his sergeant onto it with me.
Did he now?
So for my sins, I'm landed with Tiny Mears.
Well, what have you turned up so far?
Damn all.
You mean you haven't been able to match any of the names to the addresses?
Oh, we've managed that all right. Well, for what good it does, but we found no one at home. Every time, Roger.
Oh, blast.
All the geezers concerned seem to have done a scarper.
All right, Bob. You and Mears check the rest on the list. And then you get back to me as soon as you can with the results.
Will do.
Bye now. Oh, come in. Oh, Superintendent Abbott.
Yes. The situation being what it is, I've come to your office, Chief Inspector. I'd like to know what's been going on.
Going on?
Behind my back.
Well, sorry, I'm not quite with you, Superintendent.
Like hell you're not. Now, don't play funny beggars with me, Weston.
I wasn't trying to. Now, what seems to be the matter?
Plenty. In my book. I've been given to understand by the Assistant Commissioner that you are now in charge of this case.
Oh, I see.
Well, I don't. I've been in the force a good many years, West, and this is the first time I've known an AC put any officer in authority over one with higher rank.
Well, there's no question of that, Superintendent. Not as I see it, anyway.
Don't give me that. According to the book, there's been
no... Oh, Superintendent, for once, just once in your life, let's forget about the book, shall we? Look, as far as I'm concerned, I take this new arrangement to mean that I have to report to Sir Guy Chatworth direct, that's all. Now, apart from that, when it comes to doing the job, I'm assuming that you and I will simply go on working together, just as we have been.
Oh. I thought that
together, that's the operative word, Superintendent, in my book. Now, have you any objection to that?
Well, I was... No. No objection. Just as long as that means I'll be kept up to date with everything. All new developments.
Yes, of course.
Right. I'll get back to my office then.
Oh, we're speaking.
Chatworth here, Roger.
Oh, yes, sir.
That business about the Cox House in Newfield Street, Bearsley.
Oh, yes, sir, Guy.
I did as I promised and checked out.
Well, sir?
Seems you were right, Roger.
Benny Cox wasn't the real owner.
No, he was not.
Then who was, sir?
The house is registered as being the property of Mrs. Raymond Fleming.
Chelsea 1492?
And about time, too.
Oh, Roger.
Who the devil have you been talking to, Jan? The phone's been engaged for ages.
Oh, well, I rang Gloucestershire to have a little chat to the boys.
Little chat, huh? Oh, I'd hate to think what it's done to our phone bill.
Well, of course, if the phone bill's more important than your own sons, Mr. West.
No, I didn't say that, did I? Ah, the young demons.
Oh, the young demons having the time of their lives. According to Martin, these are the best school holidays he and Richard have ever had. Which probably means they're eating my poor cousin out of house and home.
More than likely. Oh, Jan, I want to talk to Mark. He's there, isn't he?
Yes, hang on, I'll get him.
Oh,
Mark, it's for you.
Right here, Janet.
It's Roger.
Oh, thank you. Yes, Roger.
Mark, I've got a job for you.
I'm listening.
I want you to get over to Hampstead, Bannock House.
Bannock House, where Mrs. Fleming lives?
Yes, that's right. Now, I'll give you time to get there, and then I'll be phoning her. Now, I want you to watch the place and keep track of her movements, if any. Got that?
Got it.
Good chap.
I leave at once. Your personal private bloodhound's on his way. Ears flapping and nose to the ground.
Hello?
Is that Mrs. Fleming?
Yes.
Chief Inspector West here. There's something I'd like to ask you if you would spare a moment.
Certainly, Inspector.
Will you tell me if this address means anything to you? Number 25, Newfield Street.
25 Newfield Street.
That's right. In Battersea. Well, Mrs. Fleming?
No, I'm afraid it doesn't mean a thing, Inspector.
What about the name Cox? Benny Cox?
Sorry, that means nothing either.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you.
May I ask what this is all about, Mr. West?
Oh, just a routine inquiry, that's all. Goodbye, Mrs. Fleming.
Goodbye.
Annette?
Oh.
Who were you talking to?
Hmm? What did you say, darling?
I said, who were you talking to? On the phone.
It was just Sybil Kenrick. She wants me to have lunch next week.
Rather a brief conversation, wasn't it, for Sybil?
Well, I cut her short. She does go on. I'm not in the mood today.
Annette?
Yes?
Is everything all right with you, my dear?
Yes, of course. Why do you ask?
Well, only because you seem somewhat distray ever since that policeman, West, called this morning.
Oh, nonsense, Raymond.
You're sure there's nothing you'd like to tell me?
Of course not.
Annette, I should hate you to feel that you couldn't confide in me. You know, you mustn't let a little thing like our difference of opinion over that society of yours upset you.
It doesn't, darling, not at all. Oh, Heavens, I've just remembered. I have an appointment at the hairdresser. I'll have to rush. Raymond, you'll be home for the rest of the day, won't you?
Yes, I imagine so. Why?
Well, I might have a little surprise for you when I get back, that's all. Must run now. Bye, darling.
Ah, you're still here, West. I didn't know whether you'd gone off to lunch.
Oh, thanks for reminding me, Superintendent. What have you got then?
The rundown on the patrons and contributors to the European Relief Society.
Oh, good.
But you can see for yourself, it's a blind alley. All perfectly respectable people. No grounds for suspicion of any of them. And what's doing with the other lines of inquiry? How about Cornish's assignment?
Not complete yet. I'm waiting to hear.
Any luck elsewhere?
Well, there may be.
Oh?
But I'd rather not say more till I can be sure, Superintendent, if that's okay with you.
Yeah. Well, suit yourself, Chief Inspector.
Fine. Oh, and since you mentioned lunch, I think I'll pop out and grab a snack. I'll be in the usual pub if there's anything urgent, Superintendent.
Sure wouldn't like you none the sausage, Mr. West. Not many left.
Oh, no, thanks, Sandra. I've done nicely, thank you.
Roger.
Oh, Bob.
Abbott told me I found you here.
What do you have, Bob? The usual?
Thanks very much.
Sandra, a pint for Mr. Cornish, please.
Certainly, Mr. West. Come right away.
Well, I take it this means you and Tiny Mears have finished the job.
Yes, we've finished. Here's the list for you. Names alongside all the addresses. You know, Roger, I always thought there was only one invisible man. That little lot proves me dead wrong, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not so sure. There's something about this list that rings a faint bell.
Here we are, your part, Mr. Cornish.
Oh, thanks.
No, I'm getting this. There you are, Sandra.
Thank you, Mr. West.
Bob, I'll say cheers and leave you to it. I want to see if I can make that bell ring a bit louder. So long for now. Chief Inspector West. Ah, yes, Sergeant. Got that information for me? Right, let's have it. No, slow down a bit, Sergeant. I'm trying to write it all down. All right, got that. Now, what about this Arthur Spencer? Andrew Sedgman, alias Arthur Spencer. Served 5 years for receiving, yes, 57 to 61, right? What's that? Also alias what? Andre Santerre. Right, thanks a lot. What? Yes, quite right. What would we do without the records office? Goodbye. Andre Santerre. I wonder. This is Chief Inspector West. I want to call through to Interpol Paris, the International Bureau. And don't waste any time over it. There's a good girl. Yes, thank you. I'm very grateful to you, Monsieur l'Inspecteur. Helped? Well, it's helped a very great deal. In fact, I'd say you've given us just what we've been looking for. Well, thanks again. Merci. Goodbye. Well, that's the answer, all right, Sir Guy. It can't be anything else.
Stolen jewelry?
Yes, on a vast scale. In the last 12 months, there's been a rash of jewel thefts all over the continent. Interpol have a dossier an inch thick on Andre Santerre, alias Arthur Spencer, alias Andrew Sedgman.
Well, what's the connection?
Well, he's a fence. Jewelry only. It's his specialty.
And you say at least three of the other names on this list are also fences?
That's the information from our own criminal records office. I'd say that gives us a pretty good idea what was in those packages Lois Randall had to deliver when she was working for Pickerel.
Then the European Relief Society was
being used as a front, yes. The clearinghouse for a huge distribution setup. The stolen jewels smuggled from the continent, brought to the society, and from there filtering through to a network of fences. Now, for all we know, even the thefts themselves might have been planned from there.
And the Fleming woman was behind the whole thing.
It all points that way, sir.
But Roger, damn it, she was the one who tipped you off. She gave you the tape recording. Wait a minute. Double bluff, eh?
Could be, couldn't it, sir? If Pickerel had taken it on himself to organize my frame-up, and she thought he'd gone too far.
Her way of killing two birds with one stone. Caring you and diverting suspicion from her society and herself. Oh, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
Chatworth?
Oh, Sir Guy, it's Mark Lessing here. I understand Chief Inspector West's with you.
Just a moment. It's for you, Roger. Your friend Lessing.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mark, any news?
There certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
I followed the good lady from Bannock House. She went into the West End to an airline office. She's booked 2 seats on a flight to Nice.
When for? Have you any idea?
Of course I have. What kind of a bloodhound do you think you've got? It's this afternoon, Roger. The 5:30 flight from London Airport.
Oh, nice work, Mark.
What do I know now?
No more, thanks, Mark. You can go back to Bell Street and keep Janet company.
Right, you are.
Now, bye, Mark. Mrs. Fleming's planning to leave the country, Sir Guy.
Is she, by God? In that case, you'd better have her picked up at once.
No, sir. Not just yet.
Why not?
We still want to lay our hands on our bent copper, don't we?
Certainly we do. That's the most vital thing of all.
And here's how we do it. First, there's a telephone number I want put out of order, say, from 4:30 this afternoon.
No difficulty about that.
And then, round about that same time, I'd like the news spread through the yard that I've put my finger on the whole setup behind the European Relief Society. And I'll be making an arrest at about 6:30.
I see. We're setting a trap, are we?
One for our man to walk into and incriminate himself completely.
And what will you be doing?
Me, sir? I'm planning to take a run out to London Airport. Well before the 5:30 flight for Nice is due to make its departure.
Well, I must say, Annette, when I got up this morning, I didn't imagine I'd be sitting at London Airport by the afternoon.
Raymond, darling, you're sure you don't mind the way I've bustled you into this? You know how much I love to do things on the spur of the moment. And it is a nice surprise, you must admit.
It's a delightful surprise, my dear.
Quite suddenly, I just couldn't bear the thought of London for a day longer.
Well, I confess that the prospect of spending a little time on the Riviera is highly agreeable.
And who knows? We might decide to go on from there. The world, as they say, is our oyster.
If I have any quibble at all, my dear, it was the necessity for arriving here quite so early. Our plane doesn't leave for at least another half hour.
Then we've got plenty of time to have our coffee, haven't we?
All right, you wait here, Constable.
Annette, look.
Inspector West.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Fleming. I'm afraid I must ask you to come with me.
Come with you? Now, just a moment.
We have some questions we want to ask your wife, Mr. Fleming. I imagine you'll want to be with her. I've got a car waiting. Let's go nice and quietly, shall we?
And let me tell you that I consider this utterly outrageous. What possible charges can you have to lay against my wife?
The charges, Mr. Fleming, they start with receiving stolen property and go on to being an accessory to murder both before and after the fact.
An accessory?
That's completely absurd. The moment this car gets to Scotland Yard, I shall telephone my lawyer.
We're not going to the yard.
Where are you taking us, then?
To your flat, Mrs. Fleming, to number 11 Bannock House. We're going to wait there. Just the three of us. All right, Mr. Fleming, open the door. Constable.
Sir.
I want you two men to wait round behind those lifts. Keep out of sight until I call you.
Right, Inspector.
All right, come on now. Let's get inside, Mr. Fleming.
You're going to be very sorry for all this, Inspector, I promise you.
We'll see.
We most certainly will. The moment I get on the phone. Come along, Annette.
You know your mistake, Mrs. Fleming. It was a big one. You lied to me about the house you own in Newfield Street.
What are you talking about? I don't own a
house. It's in your name.
Raymond.
Leave this to me, my dear. Once I've talked to my lawyer. What the devil? The phone's gone dead.
I suggest you don't trouble, Mr. Fleming.
I am not asking for your advice. Oh, confound the thing.
Raymond, the mirror.
Oh!
You were standing too close to the phone.
It's broken.
It doesn't matter, darling. It's not important.
Of course it's important. A broken mirror, that's bad luck. 7 years bad luck, don't you know that?
I wasn't aware you believed in that kind of thing, Mr. Fleming.
He doesn't, Inspector, of course not.
Oh, but he does, Mrs. Fleming. Just look at him. Is it only mirrors, Fleming? Or are you superstitious about numbers, too? Like 13, the unlucky 13th?
What do you mean?
You, Fleming, that's what I mean. That all makes sense. So does the house in Newfield Street. You own it in your wife's name. Now, we thought Pickerel was a superstitious one. And your wife encouraged us to think that, didn't you, Mrs. Fleming? Because you knew it was your husband. You've known all along. He's the brains behind it all. He's the one who's using your society as a clearinghouse for stolen jewels.
Inspector!
But if you were so keen to shield him, why the devil tip me off in the first place? Why give me that tape recording? If you knew...
You damn fool!
Raymond, I did it for you! I thought once you knew the police were making inquiries into the society, you'd stop it all. Put an end to the whole thing and you'd be safe.
Safe, you stupid...
It was for you, Raymond, for your sake.
Quiet.
Shh.
Who's that?
Someone I've been expecting. A little trap. That's why your phone's not working, Fleming. So that your silent partner would have to come here to warn you in person. Now we'll see just who he is. Come on, Fleming. We'll go and let him in. You open the door. I'll be here, just behind him. Now go on, open it.
Oh, Fleming, I couldn't get through on the phone. You'll have to beat it.
Bob fast. Cornish.
Who the...
Detective Inspector Cornish.
Well, well, well.
Constable at the double, both of you.
Right, sir.
Don't try any clever stuff you haven't a hope.
Well, looks like the jig's up, eh, Roger?
Chief Inspector to you.
Sorry, I'm sure.
So that's why I kept getting beaten to the punch. Now it all adds up. Why Joe Leach was killed before Mark Lessing could ask him any questions. How Malone knew we were all at Leggett's Hotel and was able to kidnap my wife. And I had to put you onto tracking down that list of addresses. No wonder every man on it had disappeared. And it goes right the way back, doesn't it?
Does it?
To the Micklejohn murder. I suppose Whistler Malone did that little job, too, after you warned him that we were going along to talk to him. How long have you been tied in with Malone? Since your days in AZ Division before you got your transfer to the Yard?
Proper little Sherlock Holmes you are, aren't you?
Just one question. Why?
Why? You're just too good to be true, aren't you? You think any man should be happy to sweat his life away all the hours of the day or night and finish up on a pension? All for the honor and glory of being a copper.
No, Mr. Cornish. Not for anything like that. Because it's a job that has to be done, that's all. Not that you'd understand that. All right, Constable. Get him and Fleming down to the car and to where they belong, behind bars.
Yes, Inspector.
Then report to Superintendent Abbott. And if he wants to know where I am, I've gone home.
You've been listening to Patrick Allen and Sarah Lawson in the final part of Inspector West at Home by John Creasy. Inspector West at Home was produced for the BBC by John Fawcett Wilson.